Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. Today we have our newest gnome, Kara McGron, and myself, Ange. We're going to completely skip over the get-to-know-a-gnome question because the whole episode is going to be about getting to know Kira. So, Kira, welcome to the stew.
Thank you. Thanks for having me in the stew.
Absolutely. It's like I definitely, now that we have the gnome cast established, anytime we get a new gnome, I'm going to corner them and interview them, or they're going in the stew. So
that sounds dangerous.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Give us that sneak peek of the author bio from the website.
Yeah, absolutely. I am Kira McGran. I'm a game designer, a tabletop role-playing game and LARP game designer, and a queer cyborg, and a snake mom, and I live in Columbus, Ohio. So that's me in a nutshell.
You have snakes?
Yeah, I have two pet snakes. They're my babies.
Tell me about this. I'm a cat person, so
sure.
It's like snakes are like, how does it work having a snake pet?
Well, it's funny because I'm a cat person too. I love cats and dogs. I've had cats more than dogs though. But a year ago, my friend Tara was moving to LA to go work for Cartoon Network. She's an animator, and she had a pet snake, and he is 7 years old, and she's like, I can't take him with me. Does anyone want him? And I'm like, yes, I would like to take care of your pet snake. And he's adorable. His name is Soul. He's like bright orange, and he's a corn snake. So he's about 5 feet long, but only like around 2 inches around. So he's kind of like a garden hose. And I recently, so that was a year ago, and then I became obsessed with snakes. So just this December, I got a baby of my own, a baby royal python, and her name is Andromeda, and she's like 24 inches long now. She's very small, and she's all white.
But she's going to get big, isn't she?
She's not going to get too much bigger than him, actually. She'll be about the same length, like 5 to 6 feet long, but like twice as thick. Like baby's got back. she's like, I don't know, royal pythons, they come from sub-Saharan Africa. So they have like thicker bodies for that type of climate. Whereas corn snakes, my other snake, is just an American snake. Like you could find them. They're like rat snakes. You could find them anywhere. Like they live in Ohio naturally. Mm-hmm. So
type of snake you can find in the garden.
Yeah. Or they're usually found in like barns and stuff because they eat rats, just like, you know, cats and stuff. So yeah. So those are my snakes. I love them.
That is awesome, though. You mentioned being a game designer for both LARPs and tabletop. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've done?
Yeah, absolutely. I have designed like a billion things now, actually. I like, you know, like any game designer, I, you know, used to make hacks of games for my friends to like run for them, you know, just at our little game group. But then I started designing, I guess, professionally for money, like for people's Kickstarter stretch goals. And I started doing that like in 2012 maybe. And so I compiled like quite the resume of like adventures and settings and things like that for like various Kickstarters and Fate Patreons and things like that.
Very cool.
Yeah, I have a bunch. But I actually recently, just yesterday, I put out my first solo game.
Oh, that's awesome. What's the solo game?
So it's I have a Patreon right now for my game design, and the solo game is called A Cozy Den, and it's inspired by my snakes. So it's basically lesb snakes, so like half lesbian, half snake creatures living in a den over winter and trying to make it as cozy as possible despite all their different like social needs and emotional needs and everything that arrives. So that
sounds cute.
Yeah, that's kind of the game. It's a cozy game, and it's powered by the apocalypse.
I love Powered by the Apocalypse. That's one of my go-tos. It's like whether it's Monster of the Week or Masks or Uncharted Worlds, I always end up finding myself falling into running Powered by the Apocalypse stuff. Especially at convention, for convention games, it gives me that way to have the players give me the characters they want to play and immediately have the hooks to draw them into whatever the story is going to be for that game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of, I really like running Monster Hearts one-shots. I think that they work really well at conventions. But some games that are powered by the, like, I think it's actually hard to run Apocalypse World itself as a one-shot.
Yeah.
It, like, takes, like, a lot of build-up for the story and the characters and everything.
Yeah, like, Urban Shadows is, there's so much meat in there that it seems like it would be difficult to run that as a one-shot.
Right.
And I tried running The Sprawl as a one-shot, and it just, it may have been more my inexperience with that particular game, but it just, the setup took way, way too long.
Yeah, no, it's not you. Hamish has, like, told me that he has, like, a special, like, one-shot that he runs just at conventions that he designed just for convention run, which he should share with the rest of us.
He should. And I need to make a list of corporations and take out Sploot, because every time I've pulled that game out and people have looked at the corporations list, they fixate on Sploot.
Oh.
They see that word and they're like, Sploot? What the heck is Sploot? And just that's all they're fixated on. I'm like, okay, that's a distraction. Let's pull that back. I know that has some deep meaning in the group that playtested this and built it up, but I gotta get rid of Sploot.
That's funny. That is a thing though. I mean, you do have to edit things out of games sometimes.
Yeah.
How you're running them, or who you're running them for, or right, how long the game is going to be. Yeah, so it's cool with Apocalypse World. I think it is very easily malleable by the people who are running and playing the game.
Yeah,
and it's cool. My game actually that I just put out, A Cozy Den, is GM-less.
Oh,
so you don't have to worry about having a GM or doing as much of that. Just everyone is playing at the same time. So I'm pretty excited about that.
That's awesome. Now, is that only available to your patrons?
No, it's for sale at PayHip. And I also just put it up on DriveThruRPG, although they take a huge cut of my money.
So okay.
PayHip is better.
I'll make sure we end up with a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Can you tell me a little bit, how did you get started playing role-playing games?
Oh my gosh. So,
what's your origin story?
Here is my superhero origin story. I'll make it quick because sometimes origin stories are boring. You know how you're like, okay, we don't need another Spider-Man origin story. We've seen it 100 times. Like, we know
yes.
how Spider-Man became Spider-Man. So I was a teenage goth. I was like kind of at a young age, like in sixth grade. me and my friend Shannon would, like, go have, like, lunches in graveyards and, you know, wear all the heavy makeup, and we read Sandman and stuff like that. In junior high, I used to go to hobby shops with my dad all the time, and they had, like, some role-playing games there. And so I found this role-playing game called Vampire, and I took it home, and for, I think it was, like, my 13th or 14th birthday, I can't remember exactly when, but I had a birthday party with all my girlfriends, and I ran Vampire for them.
That is awesome, and that leads into my next question, because my next question was, how soon after you started did you start GMing? And of course, for you, it's you started by starting GMing.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I was the person who was like, look at this super weird thing, will you all do it with me? Which I think is the GM's role to begin with. Like, you kind of have to, like, be, like, the inspiration person, you know? Like, do this weird thing with me. It'll be fun. I'll prepare it for you. You just have to play.
And you have to have enough people willing to go along with, like, yeah, sure, whatever. I'll give this a try.
Totally. Well, and luckily we were all into vampires at the time, but that game was terrible. Like, I didn't know how to run a game, no one knew how to play, we didn't know what we were doing. And we played for a little while, and then we kind of gave up, and we were like, oh, this is fine. And then I got more into, like, vampire LARPs and, like, Western conventions. Yeah, like, went to Origins when it was in Philly. I grew up in Philly. And, you know, played vampire LARPs there, and that was basically, like, just being a teenage goth, but playing a game. So
it's like, it feels like with the vampire LARPs, even if it's built on the same concepts as the role-playing game, the rules seem to get out of the way a lot easier, so people can just focus on being in character and doing stuff. Whereas the rules of vampire are still founded in those tropes that we were focused on in the 90s.
Totally. I think both of those things are good and bad. Like, I actually don't like rules to get out of the way. I want rules to support what I'm doing in the game. And so lots of times LARPs were kind of boring. Because they ended up just being like a bunch of friends sitting around talking in costume. You know, like we didn't really know what to do or how to do it. And combat was stupid. And,
right.
You know, so I think even good LARPs, good tabletop games always have like a strong mechanical structure that's helping you do what the game wants you to do without being like stupid complex.
That actually leads into like one of the other questions I wanted to ask you, because one of your guest articles you did, I think it was in November for the Sioux, was talking about LARPing and kind of embodying yourself in a LARP or at the table and all that. And I really liked that article because it touched on a couple of the reasons why I've never really gotten into LARPs. And, you know, you also just touched on one of the other issues is that it feels like you're just standing around talking a lot of the time. Whereas I like the more intimate setting at the table where you can see that the action is happening. And it's not that you're in one corner while the action is happening on the other side of the room.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you've done a lot of work with trying to kind of bridge those gaps and draw more people into the story of LARPs.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's a great question. LARPs are complicated because just like tabletop games, there's like so many different kinds. And so like when I started LARPing as a teen, I would play like these giant, you know, 200 person, or even like with my friends, like we would get together, like we had a big group of like 30 to 50 people that would play. And, you know, games that are scaled to that large, I think, need different mechanics than games that are just five people in a room playing a LARP, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I actually, you know, having played a lot of big LARPs, I usually find that the bigger ones have less support for their mechanics. They kind of end up being what you just described, like, what's happening over there with those people in that corner? It looks interesting, and I'm just sitting here talking. As opposed to LARPs, like the one that I ran for my friends last year for that article, which is just like 12 people at a dinner table in a room, you know? And like, so like it's like smaller scale. Everyone is able to still see each other. It's a little bit bigger than a tabletop game. So like you do have people having separate conversations, but it's not huge, you know? Like a lot of LARPs that I like do have like those very specific mechanics to kind of help keep play organized and fun. So yeah, I like a lot of Nordic LARPs. I like a lot of freeform LARPs. I did some LARP design for the Feminism LARP book, which is all like feminist LARPs that are very short form. So yeah, I think I'd love to write more about it. It seems like, you know, well, a lot of people just don't know the different kinds of LARPs that exist, I think.
Well, I think a lot of people have if they themselves do not LARP, they have it, or even some people who do LARP have a very narrow view of what LARPing is and don't necessarily know the wide variety of options that are out there. Like, you know, some people are like, LARPing is just running out in the woods and throwing little bags of sand at each other.
Absolutely.
Or LARPing is just pretending you're a vampire and, you know, being bored by everything.
Yeah.
You know.
That's so funny. Yeah, and so true. And I mean, there's a lot out there, and it's kind of like tabletop games, how like a lot of people just think role-playing games are D&D, right? It's just a matter of exposure, how much research you want to do into your hobby, I guess.
Is there a difference between your favorite games to play and your favorite games to run? or do they kind of fall into the same games?
Oh, they're definitely the same games. That's a good question. I kind of have the same taste in every kind of media right now, like TV, movies, video games, tabletop games, LARPs. They're all kind of indie, artsy, character development focused, you know, more about feelings than about violence for the most part, and stuff that's like really, really thinks about its aesthetics. So usually like very specific things. Like I love indie movies. Like I love David Lynch and I love, you know, Jim Jarmusch. And like I'm trying to get more into like late women creators and black creators and stuff. I loved the new Black Panther. It was amazing. I'm less into blockbuster games and I'm more into small games. That's an easy way to summarize both running and playing.
Yeah, I find myself doing a little bit of both and trying to pull a little bit of both into each other.
Yeah.
Stealing a note from the pandas, campaigns are one shots.
Oh, I like both. Yeah, I like everything. I'm actually just about to start. My group of lady friends strong-armed me into starting a Monster Hearts campaign this Thursday. So I'm going to be running that for them. But I also like one shots that are really, you know, non-committal, and it's kind of fun to tell a short story instead of a long story. So I like them both.
Very cool. Does that kind of answers the second question I have is, do you have a regular group you can call on or just a more intermittent collection of gamers?
I don't think we're a regular group, but I do have like a bunch of local gamers that I know that we can kind of organize and pick and choose among ourselves according to what the game is and what the time needs are and everything. Because, you know, I'm 37. People have kids and jobs.
Yeah.
And, you know, time is hard. So, you know, sometimes it's like we'll get together for a one shot, or who's interested in a sci-fi game, or who wants to play test, you know, one session of my game to help me design notes. So, and then it's kind of just according to whoever is available.
And from my understanding of the Columbus area, you've got a pretty rich community of gamers. It's just, it may be hard to pull in, like, people for a regular commitment.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I have Tracy Barnett, who's also on the Gnome, lives here. He's a friend of mine. And there's some other people who designed games. Steve Wallace designed No Country for Old Kobolds. And... There's a lot of board gamers here.
Yeah.
Like Columbus is actually a huge board gaming community, and that's why Origins actually is here.
Yeah.
Because of that. And I'm not as much into board games, although I will play them sometimes.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same. It's like, I'll play them. I have a few I'll play all the time, but, like, just give me a role-playing game. Let me dive into that story.
Yeah, I want to pretend to be somebody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's going back to what we were saying about LARPing.
Yeah.
I think that the people who can enjoy those LARPs where it's just standing around talking are the people who can just, they're more interested in their own character's story rather than the overall story.
Yeah, absolutely.
I find that I'm like, no, I want to know the whole story.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm more, that's a type of lonely fun, right? Like when you're so much in your head that you're like kind of playing with yourself.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter what people around you are doing. You like have your own headcanon and your own fan fiction kind of going on in your brain. As opposed to the style that I like, it's more like yours, which is more collaborative.
Yeah.
Where you're like bouncing off of other people's ideas and kind of changing and developing and growing things together. So, yeah, they're both valid. I prefer the collaboration.
Yeah, because I've watched people in those LARPs or in organized play type settings where it's just you bring your character and drop them into whatever adventure is on the table. And, like, the people who love those tend to be the ones who get so focused on their own character that the rest of the story doesn't matter as much to them.
Yeah, it's the tell me about your character syndrome,
you
know, where someone wants to talk about their character forever, which is fine. But I get more into, I want to know about the story and the feelings and the setting and the aesthetic and everyone's characters. What was everyone doing? And
I suppose those folks, they have more opportunities to get the gaming they want, but
it's true.
It's not the gaming I want.
Yeah, so. We're picky.
I am.
I am too.
So, what type of articles can we look forward to seeing from you in the future?
Gosh, a lot of my thinking is around design. You know, I do a lot mm-hmm. of design and kind of like the craft and the theory of games and stuff like that and some of the social culture. So that's like very generic. But I usually, like when I'm thinking about what articles to write, it's kind of like what's going on in my life with mm-hmm. gaming at that time. So it will probably have to do with whatever is coming up next. You know, I'm doing like a whole lot of design, a whole lot of thinking about how stuff gets out there and what gets made and who plays it. So, you know, I might be thinking about that next.
Yeah, and you know, I completely understand the you don't know what articles you're going to write until you have something kind of hit you in the face and go, write me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm good at planning, but for articles, I haven't reached that spot where I'm like, okay, I've planned 5 months of articles.
Yeah, no, I know I will sometimes have a thing happen in a game and be like, okay, I got to write about this.
Yes.
You know, and then I write a whole article about that particular aspect of how to deal with a problem player, how to deal with this particular situation, that type of thing. So
right. And I think the things that are relevant to us as we're doing stuff is what's relevant to people mm-hmm. who are reading things. So I think that, I don't know, it's a good way to stay relevant.
Well, thank you so much for letting me interview you and do this Get to Know a Gnome episode.
Yeah.
I think we're gonna start saying goodbye. So special thanks to our Patreon backers, awesome gnome supporters like Benjamin D. Horning, Craig Dedrick, and Jack Evans. Thanks to their help and others like them, this show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. This ad brought to you by Red Apron, the new subscription service that will bring you fresh gnome meat to you every month. If you're enjoying the Gnomecast, you'll probably like many of the other Misdirected Mark shows. Here's another one to check out.
It's Pandas Talking Games. Phil and Senda answer your questions about RPGs from the perspective of one-shots and campaigns with some panda silliness.
And lots of outtakes.
Those are the best!
You can find all of us at gnomestew.com, at gnomestew on Twitter, and gnomestew on Facebook. Kira, where else can we find you on the internet?
Oh, you can find me at Kira Nanzi at Twitter, is where I am most of the time. Also at my Patreon.
And that's Kira combined with Anansi?
Yeah, exactly. And Andrew, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at orikes13, O-R-I-K-E-S-13. And pretty much in the Misdirected Mark community on G+. So Kira, do you think we avoided the stew this week?
I hope so, because it smells really good.